Welcome to this special edition of the IRIS podcast, taken from the 2010 IRIS Forum. This edition features a presentation by Caroline Tomlinson of In Control.
So my name is Caroline Tomlinson. I'm from the northwest of England, originally from a place called Wigan. And remember that one because you'll get the jokes in the theatre company later on. You'll know what I'm talking about. I really want to kind of just tell you a bit of a story, really, in terms of the journey that me and my family have been on over the last 7-8 years. These are my three children, Joe on the left, Rosie in the middle, and Jacob on the right-hand side. Joe, at the age of 6 months old, contracted meningitis, which left him with a huge range of complex disabilities. And one of the things I describe to people is that we woke up in a place we didn't know even existed. A place that I would often describe as service land, where it feels like things are done to you rather than with you. And I guess as time goes on, I started to realise that that gap was becoming wider, particularly as I had two other children. For my other two children, you choose the things like the nursery, the school, all them sorts of things. But it felt like Joseph had only one track to go down, and a track that almost felt like you had to ask permission for everything he needed to do. One of the things I wanted to do, and all I wanted to do, was to really ensure that all my three children had the opportunity to live a good life. And I guess that became quite more problematic as you start to go into the system much more deeper. And one of the things that we managed to do was to enable my son, I guess, to live a good life. We had to change the way that the whole of the country run in England in terms of self-directed support. And yes, it did make a difference. And I'm going to really try and tell you that journey in a very, very short space of time. Well, this presentation usually lasts about an hour. So some of the stuff that I discovered, what had happened in our country, you know, we have, I guess, where did the welfare state evolve from and all them sorts of things. If we go back to the First World War, one of the things that I discovered to look into this stuff, we didn't have a welfare state in our country. We sent our men out to fight the war. Many of those people went out, they came back, we considered them our heroes. We know that many of those people didn't return, and, you know, only next week we'll start to really think about that and focus on that. But the people our children never learned about at school are those people that came back with limbs blown off, with disabilities. We still, I guess, have an issue about some of that today. And as a nation, we didn't know what to do with those people because work was very practical. You couldn't work if you'd no arms and no legs. And so what we did was reserve the most affluent streets in our city to allow those people to beg with their caps in their hand. And that's where your terminology handicapped actually evolved from. We then had the Second World War, and of course we started to create the Great British Welfare State, something that my grandparents would have been very proud of. But as a nation today, we sit, we mumble, and we groan about, you know, waiting at the hospital for that appointment and all them sorts of things. And I guess we've got used to what we have in this country. But if we met somebody from another country, they'd be telling us things like, you don't know how lucky you are. We have one of the best welfare states in the whole of the world. Yet we seem to not think about that in a positive sense when we live, I guess, in this country. The hard bit about it, it's so damn difficult to navigate your way through. Like I say, when you land in a place that you didn't know existed. And then we start to talk about people having good lives, and in England we're doing a lot of work around personalisation and self-directed support. And big announcements around, you know, this is about community and all them sorts of things. And then you'll sit there with your arms folded and you will grumble and you'll say, ah, but community isn't what it used to be. Let me remind you what communities actually look like. For many people who happen to have a learning disability or mental health issue, we sent them to places like the picture at the top, that's Lennox Castle in Glasgow. We sent people there out of sight, out of mind, building big brick walls around those places not to keep people in, but to stop offending the rest of our communities. How many of you remember the hot summer of 1976? A few of you. We smile as we remember. I'm sure there's more of you, you know? But really, what we have to think about is that was when the biggest population of people in this country lived in those places. Meaning that many of you, it was in your lifetime, you happened to have a mental health issue or a learning disability, you might have been sent there too. That's not that long ago. But what we have to consider in the world of health and social care is how we have to modernise and move things forward in terms of to fit in with our modern day world. How many people in the room have never seen that Google logo before. If I'd have asked that 10 years ago, a few of you might have put your hands up. Let's consider other industries, how they've had to move on. 10 years ago, 80% of the British population used to walk into a travel agent to book the holiday. 10 years on, only 20% of people actually do that. And that's because we're finding our own individualised, bespoke, personalised holidays by using things like the internet and other information. If that's really important to get that holiday right for that weekend away, them 2 weeks a year, what would be important for you or for somebody you loved and cared about if they needed support on a regular basis? The chances are you would want it very individualised and bespoke to you. And that's what we're really talking about with this stuff. Who are the people that we're talking about? We're talking about anybody, I guess. This stuff around social care and supporting people isn't about the people over there. This is about potentially us. One of the questions that I ask people, you know, is what would you want if somebody you loved and cared about needed support for the rest of their lives? I'm going to try and describe this through Jo. Jo was one of the first people in England to actually have a personal budget. And one of the things that I would actually say is that it's the only damn thing that's ever made a difference in his life. As I talked about, we had to set up an organisation eventually to do this, and that's where In Control came in England, and I haven't got time to explain all around the stuff. But basically, the early start of the process was, in England in 2001, we had Valuing People the White Paper, which around in Scotland was the same as you. We were promised it was going to revolutionise services for people with learning disabilities right across England. The best thing that had ever happened in 30-odd years. And so as an individual, as a family, you sit and you wait for the change to happen. And unless the change happens in your front room, it doesn't make a difference at all. And so governments can send whatever it is down to us, but unless it makes a difference for people, it ain't making a difference. And one of the things that we started to do was think about learning disability partnership boards. I guess you might have some of those set up around here. Was that going to make big differences to where we were sat? My evidence was that things weren't happening. I was approaching that time of where my son was approaching 15, 16 years of age, where he was approaching this thing called transition, that no matter who you talk to right across the land, we find it so damn difficult to get right. Yet I sit and I ask why. People knew my son had a complex learning disability from being 6, 12 months old. It was obvious he would need support for the rest of his life. Yet we struggle with enabling people to move from children to adult services. I assume some of that might be similar to many families here. And I guess what I was asking for was just the opportunity to be able to plan his life. I wanted to help him plan a sustainable life for him for the rest of his life. Because what we have in this country is, and across the Western world, if you like, we have more people with disabilities and complexities that are likely to outlive their family members on a huge scale. It's never happened on such a huge scale before, and we need to get some of this stuff right. What we managed to do was that to have some conversations with different people, and what I found out was there was a regional chair of a Learning Disability Partnership Board across the northwest of England. I happened to find out that the guy chairing that board of people happened to be the chief executive of Wigan Council. And one of the things that I said to him was, never mind trying to change things across your region, maybe you need to get it right in your own backyard first. Because my evidence 2 years on of valuing people was it wasn't making a difference for us. And so we looked at doing things in a very different way, and I guess we got our heads around how we could actually get better outcomes for individuals. And a lot of it was about shifting about how we understood the money to enable people to deploy the money in a way that made sense for them. Okay. We managed to push out Putting People First, which was the policy document, the Concordat, that came out in England. This is about to be refreshed and reviewed. I know you haven't had that here, but that has been a drive. Now, a couple of things to learn from this is what we did when we got the policy document out was that the government at the time actually said, what we're now going to have is a national indicator 130, and we're going to monitor how many people actually get a personal budget. What they've also said is by March 2011, at least 30% of people who received a social care should be offered a personal budget. And what everybody's doing now is running around like headless chickens, trying to call things and label things personal budgets. We've got it wrong. We have got it wrong. What we should be really looking at is the outcomes for people. Has thinking in a different way brought about a better outcome for individuals? So what is it all about, this stuff? It's all based really on the concept of citizenship, people being able to live their life in a way that makes sense for them. This is about a new relationship between the state and the citizen. The first element, people being self-determined, people having choice and control. But understanding the more choice and control you take, the more responsibility you will have. So if you choose and want to choose who your staff are, how much they get paid when they go on holiday and all them sorts of things, you may have to become an employer. But not everybody wants to do that. And so what we're having to do is to look at really changing the market in terms of provision so people can actually choose who the provider is that will provide that support for them. The next element is people having a sense of direction, being able to plan for the future. Plan for maybe when my son left school to then where he leaves, goes on to college, to where does he live, who does he live with in the future. This may be about an older person thinking about retiring. It might even be about planning to die. Two things we don't talk about in this country is one is death and two is money. And we need to start having these conversations in a holistic sort of sense. How many people in the room have made a will? Well done. I'll give you a little badge or something later. The rest of you, if you don't learn anything what I've said today, maybe you need to go out and think about that. How many people have appointed somebody as their lasting power of attorney? And that's another thing that we really need to think about as individuals, because there is no legal status for our next of kin to make a decision about what would happen to us if something went wrong. And I guess, you know, really that's when we lost capacity. So what we really need to think about is this doesn't just apply for the people over there, it applies to all ourselves. Thinking about what would we want in the future, you know, all them sorts of things. What would we want if we needed support, and how would we want that support to work? The next element is where people live and who they live with. I don't know how many of you have been on holiday with somebody you thought were all right, so you went on holiday with them. You know, one of the things that we talk about, yet we think it's okay for many people who need support to just, when they get to a certain level of support, that they go and live in congregate settings with people they've never chosen to live with. And once you're in, my goodness, it's really hard to get people out. Yet, how many of you at the age of 96, when you want support, have a great desire to actually live in residential care? The one choice that seems to be the choice that's available. We're starting to make a joke of it as a nation. Be good to your children, they choose your nursing home, we say. But nobody's jumping up shouting, me, I want to live in residential care, because it seems like that seems as the only option that many of us have, unless we start to change and develop the system. There was one man when I asked that question that's actually jumped up and shouted me, and when I probed him further, he happened to own a residential care home, which is quite interesting. So the next element is getting that support right. Who's going to be supported by whom? How are we going to choose that support? What most people want is to have some say in who it is that's supporting them and having continuity of support. But can I ask you a question? If we think about 100 older people in the communities of where you're from, 100 older people at lunchtime today will need somebody to bob in and help them get some lunch and maybe some intimate personal care like using the loo. How confident are you that if we could ring those 100 people up, they could tell us the name of the person crossing their threshold today? I ask this question all over the country, and not one person jumps up with great confidence. We've almost created in this country this conveyor belt of care. As long as the job gets done, it doesn't matter who does it. But after I finish talking, we're going to have a break. And if I said to you, the person on your left is going to take you to the toilet, they have an NVQ level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in personal care, would it make any difference? Probably not. Yet we expect everybody out there that we're serving for this to happen. And my question is, can we organise this stuff in a different sort of way? that if we get this stuff right, people can truly start to access their community in a way that makes sense for them, to contribute and be active contributors to their community. Because one of the things we know is that the biggest disability most people will face in this country is isolation and loneliness. When you're isolated and lonely, you become unwell. You become more dependent on the system. So what we need to start to think about is mobilising the bigger context of people to live a really good life. For Joe, what we started to see for him was that the state was starting to make decisions about what would happen. Joe was starting to get a label at the age of 12, having challenges with his behaviour, of having self-injurious behaviour. And so what they decided to do was to send him out of Borough to a special, special school. One of the things I would say was there was nothing special about that special, special school. The only thing that probably was special, it was costing the local authority over £60,000 a year as a day placement. I looked in advance at what had happened to people who often started that journey for Joe, who often ended up in long-term residential placements that were costing the region of £250,000 to £300,000, yet without even achieving a good outcome. At home, however, we needed support. And one of the things that kind of Simon Duffy really helped me to think about some of this stuff was often the state support that we actually get is often you get what you're given, and by God, have you got to be grateful for what you're actually given by the state. Our situation with this was that we were given, we needed some help and support. One of the things I want to remind you all of, I've never met a family member or individual yet who would wake up one morning and say, I'd really like a social worker or care manager in my life today. If we could do without you, we damn well would. But you often get to the point of complete desperation where you need some support. You go with your cap in your hand and you ask for some support. And you're often given the gift of services. In our situation, we were assessed. We've been assessed by so many different people. It was seen that we could be offered some home care domiciliary support. And so the support starts to come in. After the risk assessment process, it was seen that Joe didn't need one person to support him, but actually two. And so you start to live your life with the invasion of people coming into your life. Well, we soon started to discover that many of the people that were coming in to support Joe worked part-time. Many of them went on annual leave. Many of them went on training courses. Many of them got so fed up of dashing from one house to another, they left and went and got another job. And so what we started to see was a massive turnover of people. At some point, I kind of felt it's easier just chucking the towel in and doing it yourself. But then I wondered how difficult would it be for us to get back in the system. I knew my son would need support for the rest of his life. Who was going to look after him in the long term because he was likely to outlive us? And so we got this home care domiciliary support, and after about 6 months, I had a massive shock. I had a massive shock because it was a Saturday morning. I'd gone out the Friday night, I negotiated with my husband that I would have the lie-in. You know, ladies, where you're lying in bed, you're listening to what's going on, but refuse to get up. And so I'm lying there, the first home care person comes in, they start to support Joe. My husband must have gone in the kitchen in the back, the next thing I've nodded off. The next thing I remember is somebody walking up the stairs, but this time they hadn't turned right, they turned left. The next thing, somebody's at the side of my bed asking me how I'd like to be showered. As you can imagine, I jump out of bed completely flummoxed by what was going on. I was going crazy. This woman couldn't apologise enough. She was saying, I'm really, really sorry. I thought I'd come to the right place. She said, I've come to support somebody called Joe. I didn't know if he was male or female. I didn't know anything about his support needs at all. I was told, you'll be okay because it's a double up. And at that point, I thought, does this system really, really work for my son? Does he have to put up with this for the rest of his life? Is it any wonder he nips, bites and challenges people? Because maybe you'd start to do it yourself. The very system that was probably there to support him was actually making his behaviour 10 times worse. So really thinking about this in a different way. And what I did was look at how many people had been into our house in the last 6 months. I looked at all the individual names, because one thing they all did of great continuity was signing their name. I added them all up, and the answer to the question was 46 different people. 46 different people providing intimate personal care to my son. 46 different people brushing his teeth. 46 different people feeding him his breakfast. At lunchtime today, get one of your colleagues to feed you and tell me what it feels like. To be able to feed somebody, you have to know them really, really well. Was it any wonder my son was becoming more and more challenging? But interestingly, each one of those people was costing in the region of £15 per hour to walk over our threshold. So the question is, the money that we're commissioning, that we're spending on people, is it good value for money? We can sit here and we say we're in the middle of a recession, but my challenge to you would say, if it started raining money, we'd all still sit there and say there isn't enough. But before we go back and ask for more, the question is, the money that we are spending, is it being spent in the best possible way for the people that we're serving? And so what we talk about at In Control is having a citizenship model that actually places the person in the centre, that works out how much does the state actually spend on this person and enable that person to think about how they would deploy that money in a way that would make sense for them. And that's what we're really talking about, to enable that person to mobilise to come up with their own outcomes and what it is that they want to achieve. And this is what we've discovered, I guess, throughout England, is really producing some really good outcomes for people. What we're talking about is working out how much money we spend per head on individuals in the first instance. Now, when we tried this in England in the early days, and we asked how much do you spend per head to local authorities, not one local authority could really answer us. Then when they started to work it out, you start to ask the question, how does the money equate with need? And we couldn't find any correlation at all. In fact, the only thing that you could assume was them that shout the loudest actually get the most. And we had a system that was completely inequitable. And how unfair was that? So in England, what they've started to develop is the resource allocation system, which is giving it as a best shot of how you can work out as quickly as possible to tell people that's their estimation of money, that's their indicative amount of money to enable those people to really plan. None of you would go and book a holiday if you didn't know how much money you had to plan with. That's all we're trying to do, is to say this is the amount of money that the state will spend on you. How much are you going to use that, and how are you going to actually use that to enable you to get a good life? Thinking about the wider context, not just in terms of services, but thinking about support, thinking about natural supports, thinking about community. So how did it work for Joe? Well, what we actually started to really think about was developing a circle of support and friends around him. Why is a circle really important? Well, as his mum, I could have planned his life for him. Then I put myself in his shoes and thought, would I want my mum to plan for me? Well, I know what the answer was, definitely not. I have to admit, I haven't done everything my mother would be proud of. And maybe we need to have that opportunity to get a whole range of folk to help them plan. But the biggest issue is, how do I create a sustainable life for my son that will be sustainable when I am no longer here? Who will know his story? Who do I hand the baton over to? And when I say who will know his story, I'm going to tell you a quick story of what happened to Joseph a couple of years ago. Off he went to London. And Joseph has this great thing about carrier bag handles. Joe doesn't use words to speak. His communication, if you know him, is pretty good. And what he likes is carrier bag handles. He likes tying them to each other. Okay, we don't know why, but he just likes it. Now, he's a man of quality and really enjoys a Sainsbury's carrier bag handle. You know, it's the orange or something, we don't know. He'll do anything for a Sainsbury's carrier bag. And so off they go off to London and decided that, you know, I mean, I would say I'm from the north, but not as north as you. When we go to London, we do things like novelty, things like go on the tube. And so off they went at lunchtime to decide to go on the tube. He's with his two personal assistants and with a couple of friends that know him really, really well. As Joe steps on the tube, there is a gentleman there taking a party of school children out. As he stood there, this gentleman's holding the tube handle, and in his hand are his butties in his Sainsbury's carrier bag. As Josie steps on the tube, he launches forward at this man and grabs his back. Immediately, the people who knew him well caught the butties, replaced it with a Morrison's, not so high quality carrier bag, and then explained what was happening. Everybody laughed. But imagine if he was being supported by people who didn't know his story. Joseph could have been taken away, never to be seen again. And we might think that's extreme, but we know stories where that has happened. So what we need to really think about is continuity and who will know his story. Who knows his skills and gifts and the good stuff about him? That he isn't just about this person with all these labels attached. Because if we've tried to promote in the past, you know, supporting people with all these negativities, it's really hard recruiting folk into the job. But say what a good job it's going to be, we've never had a problem recruiting. So Joe managed to get his personal budget. What difference did it make to him? As we started off when he was about 15, 16, one of the crucial things was to get a good team of people supporting him. We managed to attract people from the local community, and a lot of those people have never worked in social care before because they didn't think they'd get a job with the council. What we wanted were people with the good types of personality, people with get up and go, people with enthusiasm, people that wanted to support somebody who was pretty lively. Joseph is a lively chap. We always say he only started to walk at four, he's never sat down since. So you have to be quite lively to work with him. He's quite gregarious and likes being around other people. And one of the things that we did was we decided to employ Tracy. Tracy's on the right-hand side. Tracy Tolley in our village. If you don't know who Tracy Tolley is, you don't know anybody. She's one of the best community connectors going. And that was really important because we had to try and create as many people in Joe's life who were not being paid to be there. Because that's the stuff that's going to keep him safe for the long haul. We managed to think about what do we bring to the party. Joe is high rate mobility, and so he had his own mobility vehicle. Where we live, public transport isn't brilliant. So part of bringing to the party was the vehicle to get an open insurance policy to allow his staff team to drive that, so he was able to go wherever he needed to go. Fortunately, we managed to get him out of the school. Fortunately, we managed to get him into the local college. The local college had never actually supported anybody like Joe before. And what they had was a tradition of learning support assistants supporting people with additional needs in college. We knew that wouldn't work. What we talked to the college about, we've got this fabulous team of people over here that know him really well. We just need the money channeling into the individual budget here to have the same staff supporting him wherever he needs to go. And that was the success of it, rather than having lots of different camps of different people supporting people. Then we ask ourselves a question, what was Joe going to do for the rest of his life? Was he going to go to college for the rest of his life? What do the rest of us do? Well, we go back and we tell our families we do something that we describe as work. How was that going to be something similar for Joe? And we started to think about his skills and gifts and all the things that he liked to do. And what we started to develop was something called the Odd Socks Enterprise, where they basically do clothes recycling, they import fur trade goods made out of recycled materials, out of art and craft fairs, hold ladies' wardrobe amnesty evenings and a whole variety of things. He started to join up with other people in his community who some of those needed support, some of those didn't, and created a community social enterprise that really started to give them a purpose and an opportunity to contribute back to their community. They tapped into money that wasn't already tapped into from community foundations. And this was really the early beginnings of how he started to contribute back. More people know Joe in his community than probably I know, because he's providing a very good service to local people. Joe's been able to go off and do his a variety of different things, like going off on holiday with family, without family. He's managed to do his Duke of Edinburgh award. He's got his bronze, his silver, and his gold, and they're just waiting to go to the palace to collect that. Now, that's really good, you know, and he was very young for somebody to actually get that award. The trick with it was a couple of his personal assistants also did the award alongside him. So they were all learning together. So what we need to really think about is what are our peers doing and giving us that same opportunity. The icing on the cake, though, was Joe's ability to buy his own home. And we managed to achieve this about 3.5 years ago. We saw a house that was for sale that was actually two houses together being sold as one property. We negotiated with the vendor that he could sell the property as two separate properties. We then discovered that the house was actually in the neighbouring local authority. So then you have to go through a whole range of discussion because we still haven't sorted that out. When you have a disability, it's really hard to move from one local authority to another. Eventually, that was agreed, and we managed to buy the house. We sold our home and bought our half of the property, and we managed to get a mortgage for Joe and got the interest paid on his mortgage through income support mortgage interest payments. That was a revolution, because he was now in a home that he owned, meaning nobody could ever kick him out. Nobody could ever move in without his permission. People could move in if he wanted them to, and if he got fed up, he could get them out again. So really, in terms of creating a sustainable life for him. The houses are integrally linked, so if he's got support, he's in his half of the property, and at night, we feel like we don't need support for various reasons, so we're there through the integral door. My master plan, however, is if my other two children decide not to leave home, I'm going to shove them all next door and block up the holes in the middle. Talking of them, one of the things that we often fail to think about is really people's roles and responsibilities and who they actually are. Joseph's a nephew, a grandson, all these kind of different things, son, brother. How are we supporting him to fulfil his roles? Recently, his auntie had a major operation on her back. She was struggling with going shopping. She's one of those people that has to shop on a Thursday, can't shop on a Wednesday or Friday, you know the person I'm talking about. And she needed some help going to the supermarket. Joe happened to not be at college or running his business on the Thursday, and so we asked him to do it. So with his support, they pick her up, they take her to the supermarket, they go for a bit of lunch, they come and help her unload the stuff. And then you start to think, well, who are they actually supporting? Well, they're supporting Joe to fulfill his role as a nephew. Because if he didn't have a disability, wasn't at college, was sat at home with his car on his drive, you'd be telling him to take his Antarini shopping. We seem to have very different expectations just because somebody happens to have a label of a disability. The bottom line with this is Joe has completely started to live his life. What we have seen is a significant reduction and his challenges with his behaviour. It has almost disappeared. Some of the stuff we know is about environmental stuff, that we can work that out, and the staff team know him really well to be able to manage that. His self-injurious behaviour, he could whack himself on his head 120 times every 10 minutes, causing huge calluses that would become infected. That has significantly been reduced. His ability to be able to sleep at night is the biggest thing for us as a family. Joseph could wake up to 16 times a night. I don't care who you are, how much you love and care about your children, but when you've been up for the 8th time at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're little, you want to clod them through the window. Something stops us from doing that because we think this ain't going to last forever. But when you've got somebody in your life who's becoming an adult and still isn't sleeping, it's really hard. That'd be the bit that I come to people like you and say, here's my son, I love and care about him deeply, but he needs to go into residential care. And that's what you would have done. At probably a cost of about 2 to 3 times of what his personal budget actually is. So we've really got to think about what is important to people. And the same of what would be important to people out there is the same stuff about what's important to us. Just going to finish with a bit of a slideshow of some of the things that Joe's been able to achieve over the last few years. The outcomes for Joe speak for themselves. The outcomes in terms of his brother and sisters, that they see that they're not going to have to take practical responsibility for their brother for the rest of their life. Aren't they entitled to have the same opportunities as any other young people? And I guess, you know, certainly that's a conversation many families don't have with their other children. The impact on the community, however, has actually been significant. Joe's one of those people that has had a lot of time on his hands. That's the thing that many people in communities don't have. So how do you actually bridge the gap and get people working together to place and create that better place for us all? Some people are still having the debate whether personal budgets, self-directed support and individual budgets, etc., are really going to work and take off. What we know is that we're seeing better outcomes for the money on an aggregated level. The question that's probably been posed at the ADAS conference in England this week with the Association of Directors is, can we afford not to do it? Can we afford actually not to do some of this stuff? And I guess that's the theme of Richard Jones's presentation, who's the president of ADAS in England. Some people would say, well, it ain't going to work for everybody. Well, you know, what about those people who are technologically dependent? What about those people who are sat in residential care waiting for God? One of the things that I would probably say is we're all waiting for God. We just need something useful to do while we're actually waiting. So what we know, I guess in England, certainly in some of the areas of Scotland as well, that this stuff seems to work when you're doing it with the right ethos and driving it with the right values. It can produce some really good outcomes. What we do at In Control in England is to share the best practice of today. Tomorrow someone will come up with something more innovative. It's about trying to share that so we actually reach the quality, but also the quantity of people. What we know, it's about big cultural shift, not just about folk working in the system, but for individuals and families too. And that can be really, really hard work. There's a lot of stuff to do with people's minds, but also in terms of their hearts. It's a big hearts and minds agenda. But the bottom line, as we always say, is the most important work you will ever do will always be hard. So, thank you for letting me join you today. If you want to look on the In Control website, there's some stuff around Vision 2020 on a microsite. Also, there's something called shopforsupport.com, which we now created as the Amazon eBay of social care, that you might want to look up that. And I can't believe I have got 5 seconds to go, and then I have nearly finished, because I have never, ever done this on time before. So, thank you.